Welcome to today's reading of the San Angelo Standard Times, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Michael reading the San Angelo Standard Times for the week of Sunday, October 25th, 2020. I'm reading on Thursday, October 29th, and I'll begin with the most recent articles, working our way back to earlier articles from the week, and I'll give the publication date before each article. COVID-19 update. Information in this article provided by Texas Department of State Health Services and the City of San Angelo. Published October 29th. City of San Angelo and Tom Green County. 4,862 positive cases reported. 59 new positive cases. 88 deaths. 56 Tom Green County residents, 32 out-of-county residents, 39 currently hospitalized, 499 active cases. Affidavit states San Angelo man assaulted other man with hatchet found nearby with weapon, by Elena Edgen, published October 29th. A San Angelo man has been arrested after police responded to an assault with a hatchet, according to an arrest affidavit released Wednesday. On October 22nd, police responded to a report of an assault in the 800 block of Veterans Memorial Drive. They found a man with a visible laceration on his nose who reported another man assaulted him with a hatchet, records state. A woman who witnessed the assault confirmed the man's report. Officers found the man with the hatchet in close proximity to the assault's location, according to the arrest affidavit. Daniel Lopez Contreras, 59, was arrested October 22nd on suspicion of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. He remained in Tom Green County Detention Center in lieu of a $35,000 bond as of 9 a.m. Thursday, according to online jail records. Affidavit states San Angelo man kidnapped woman, tied her to chair in basement before sex abuse, by Elena Edgen, published October 29th. A San Angelo man has been arrested after a woman told police she was kidnapped at knife point, tied to a chair in a basement, and sexually assaulted, according to an arrest affidavit released Wednesday. On October 22nd, police responded to a report of an aggravated kidnapping. A woman told officers she was on East 29th Street smoking a cigarette when a man ran toward her and grabbed her the day before, records state. The man held a knife to her neck and forcibly put her into the passenger side of a red Honda sedan. They arrived at the man's residence in the 600 block of East Harris Avenue, according to the affidavit. She told officers the man held the knife in a threatening manner and made her go into the residence. He took her to a basement where he used white zip ties to restrain her to a brown metal folding chair, records state. He then accused her of sleeping with other males and lit fireworks in front of her face while she was restrained. The man led her to his bedroom, placed a handgun on the nightstand, and the woman was compelled to comply with sex due to threats with weapons, according to the affidavit. The next morning, she told the man she needed to go to work. He called for a ride and went with her into her home, where he threatened to kill her if she told anyone, records state. He drove her to work in her car and left, refusing to give her vehicle to her. She contacted law enforcement while at work. The woman had wrist injuries consistent with being restrained with zip ties and scratches on her back and neck, records state. A search warrant on the Harris address revealed fireworks, a brown metal folding chair, and zip ties in the basement, according to the affidavit. Lionel Munoz, also known as Valley Boy and Gonzalez, 40, was arrested on suspicion of evading arrest with a vehicle and aggravated kidnapping, bodily injury, sexual abuse. He remained in Tom Green County Detention Center in lieu of a $157,500 bond as of 9 a.m. Thursday, according to online jail records. Unique pumpkin patch tradition continues in San Angelo neighborhood, by Rosanna Aguilera, published October 28th. A fun Halloween tradition, which began more than 20 years ago in Illinois, carries on again this fall in San Angelo. Michelle's Pumpkin Patch at 117 Delwood Drive will feature over 300 carved pumpkins from 6 to 9:30 p.m. Saturday, October 31st. Designs include Star Wars, Disney characters, The Nightmare Before Christmas, and many more. Good started her Halloween tradition in Illinois on a smaller scale for about 5 years, and she expanded it when she moved to San Angelo in 2004. "I got tired of the original-looking jack-o'-lanterns," she said. "I wanted to try something different, so I started searching for different ideas and came across some patterns, and it took off from there." Good used artificial pumpkins from Michaels to expand her display. "I came down to Texas and realized real pumpkins don't work so good for delicate carving down here," she said. "I love the artificial pumpkins because I can bring them out and reuse them every year. I use both mediums of pumpkins, real and artificial, to get my story across." Good says she does the display because kids love it and all of her designs are kid-friendly. "I don't do scary designs," she said. "The scariest one I have is probably Beetlejuice, and everyone loves Beetlejuice. People come back every year to see what's changed and to see new designs that I put out." Fireworks Show Planned Halloween Night at Angelo State University by Rosanna Aguilera, published October 29th. Angelo State University is planning a fireworks show for the campus community on Halloween night. The show will take place Saturday, October 31st, at LeGrand Stadium at First Community Credit Union Field, 2302 Phil George Drive, on the east side of the ASU campus. The fireworks will begin at approximately 9 p.m. Residents in the surrounding area may hear loud popping and blasts as the fireworks commence, according to a news release. For concerns during the event, the public is advised to contact the ASU Police Department at 325-942-2071. Here's what's going on with San Angelo's former Hastings Building by Elena Edgen and John Tufts, published October 22nd. Work has begun on a Burlington clothing store in San Angelo, the company has confirmed. Around 3:30 p.m. Thursday, October 22nd, the register and parts of the checkout stands from Hastings Entertainment sat in the parking lot at 4238 Sunset Drive. Construction workers cleared out the former Hastings Entertainment building, which closed October 26, 2016. Seasonal retailer Spirit Halloween usually takes up shop in the building, but this year relocated across the street to 4126 Sunset Drive in the Sunset Plaza. Workers confirmed the former Hastings Entertainment building would become a Burlington store and said a sign would be hung announcing the new business soon. Officials at Burlington's corporate office said they tentatively plan to open the San Angelo location in spring 2021. In addition to providing new job opportunities to the community, Burlington is excited to be able to provide great values to area residents every day on a wide assortment of merchandise for the entire family and house, stated a Burlington spokesperson. The store hasn't made an official announcement online, but an investor's report published in late August noted the company was planning on opening 62 new stores in 2020. Two additional stores slated to open this year were shifted to 2021. In spring 2018, Burlington opened a 40,000-square-foot store in Abilene at Abilene Village Shopping Center. Abilene Zoo cautiously announces birth of baby giraffe. By Brian Bethel, Abilene Reporter News, published October 29th. The Abilene Zoo cautiously announced the birth of a giraffe in the early morning hours Tuesday. The qualifier because the female calf has had a difficult time learning to nurse, despite encouragement from her mother. Animal care staff are working around the clock observing Mother Jamie and the calf, the zoo said Thursday. The veterinary care staff performed a neonatal exam that included collecting blood samples and evaluating various factors such as protein levels to help determine the amount of colostrum the newborn giraffe has consumed. It is vital for newborn giraffes to intake a certain amount of colostrum to build critical antibodies for the animal's survivability, said Dr. Stephanie Carl, zoo veterinarian. Blood work looks good at this point, but we will continue to monitor levels for the next several days. The calf weighed in at 142 pounds and stands about 5 foot 11 inches tall. This kid isn't out of the woods, zoo director Jesse Potterbaum said. This is an important species and a very valuable female calf. We are going to do whatever we can to help her survive. The Abilene Zoo is a member of the Association of Zoos and Aquariums and participates in the Species Survival Plan program dedicated to enhance conservation of giraffe species in the wild. The calf is unnamed as of yet, and the zoo hopes to include the public in our decision soon, zoo spokeswoman Jennifer Pacheco said. On October 1st, the zoo reported that along with Jamie, Punk was pregnant and that the herd's third female, Sunny, may also be expecting. Punk and Sunny are being monitored closely for any signs of labor, Pacheco said. New apartment complex gets approval for San Angelo's Bonham neighborhood. By John Tufts. City Council members last week approved rezoning an empty patch of land in southeast San Angelo to allow for the construction of a multifamily housing project in the Bonham neighborhood. Planning Services Director John James told council members on October 20th the area was zoned last year for a warehouse and office spaces holding up to 7 tenants, which were never built by the former property owner. The new owner is looking to take it back to multifamily housing, actually a series of duplexes on this site, James said. A concept plan submitted to council members showed a total of 14 low-rise buildings with 28 units total, 12 single-bedroom and 16 two-bedroom units. The housing complex is planned for the 3800 block of Green Meadow Drive and features green spaces throughout the property. James said 25 notifications were mailed to nearby residents for their opinion on the complex, in which the city reported receiving no responses in favor or in opposition. Members of San Angelo's Planning Commission unanimously approved, 6-0, to rezone the proposed construction site in September, stating a community need for duplexes in San Angelo, given rents increasing 25% over the past 2 years, and only 4% of new housing being 2-, 3-, or 4-unit dwellings, according to city documents. As part of the conditions for approving the budget, James said that city officials wanted the developer to create exterior lighting that wouldn't shine into neighboring homes across the street. District 6 councilperson Billy DeWitt, who represents the area, addressed concerns with drainage and increased traffic. That's such a horrendous traffic area, and of course we'd be adding at least 56 more cars to the traffic there, DeWitt said. But the drainage, in the background information, it said a drainage study may be required, and since we have drainage issues all over the city, what type of drainage issues do you potentially think might occur in that area? James told DeWitt the developer would have to submit a drainage plan for the city to review, but suggested it might not be an issue as the property is located near the South Fork of the Red Arroyo. I suspect that because of the drainage facility behind it, that they'll design it to just drain right into that drainage ditch, so it shouldn't create any problems, but they will have to do a drainage plan, James said. DeWitt made a motion to approve rezoning the area to allow for the multi-family housing complex, which the city council unanimously approved, 7-0. Dia de los Muertos celebration planned in San Angelo by Rosanna Aguilera, published October 28th. A Dia de los Muertos celebration with the community ofrenda, live music, and vendors. Traditionally, families will build altars in their homes during the weeks leading up to November 1st to celebrate and remember loved ones who have passed. The public is invited to bring their ofrendas, offerings, to the community altar on the steps of the San Angelo Museum of Fine Arts Building, 1 Love Street, from 6 to 7 p.m. on Friday, October 30th. The altar is an important part of celebrating Mexico's most famous holiday, Day of the Dead, according to the news release. Together, we will celebrate the lives of our loved ones who are no longer with us by creating this community altar. The altar will be created with over 3,000 balloons and flowers. The public is invited to bring pictures in a no-glass frame for their offering. No flames or candles will be lit. All items should be picked up by Monday, November 2nd. The first 75 guests in attendance Friday will receive Sugar Skull Kits created by the San Angelo Museum of Fine Arts. There will also be entertainment by ballet folkloric dancers, Dia de los Muertos t-shirts, and an artist showcase. Storming Designs will also provide face painting by donation. Contact Susana Valenzuela, 325-340-3363, or email hispanicheritage.sa@gmail.com for more information. HEB Feast of Sharing will be served by drive-through distribution for 2020 by Rosanna Aguilera, published October 28th. The 24th HEB Feast of Sharing is going to be served by drive-through distribution in San Angelo in attempts to reduce the spread of COVID-19. The Feast of Sharing is from 4:30 to 7 p.m. Wednesday, November 4th at the Foster Communications Coliseum parking lot, 50 East 43rd Street. The food is first come, first serve, and runs until 7 p.m. or earlier if all meals have been distributed. The Concho Valley Food Bank and HEB have partnered to bring these prepackaged refrigerated meals. The meals are free to the public and no ID or registration is required. Delivery is not available, but we encourage you to pick up at the event and deliver to someone in need, according to the Concho Valley Food Bank. This event is part of HEB's Food Bank Assistance Program, which works year-round to prevent hunger. Colorado City graduate in the Greatest Baker Competition. Here's How to Vote by Rosanna Aguilera, published October 28th. A 2015 Colorado City graduate is in the running to be the Greatest Baker with a chance to win $10,000 and be featured in a magazine. Casey Sims, 23, graduated from the Culinary School of Fort Worth in 2016 and is now in the world's largest online competition for bakers, according to GreatestBaker.com. The competition is hosted by Jen Barney, two-time Food Network baking champion and owner of the Meringue Bakery and Cafe in La Crosse, Wisconsin. Baking is important to me because it's a way to bring people together and to put a smile on someone's face, she said. I love when I give someone something I have made for them and their face just lights up with excitement. As of the Wednesday, October 28th morning, Sims was in fourth place of her group. The winner will receive worldwide recognition as the Greatest Baker of 2020. A year's supply of Stuffed Puffs will be featured in Bake from Scratch magazine and take home $10,000. It is important for me to win this because the money would really help me start my own business that I want to have one day, said Sims, who is working in Snyder. Sims said she has been baking since she was 8 years old. My papa was the baker in the house, Sims said. I learned by watching him, and then I started looking up different recipes to try and have been baking ever since. Sims usually bakes cakes, but says her signature bake would have to be chocolate crinkle cookies. My best baking secret is just to have patience and bake with love, she said. If you bake with love, it definitely shows in the final product. How and when to vote. Anyone with a Facebook login can vote daily for free or purchase votes benefiting the No Kid Hungry Foundation. $1 equals one vote with a $10 minimum. Voting for Sims can be found at greatestbaker.com/2020/Casey, K-A-Y-S-I, hyphen, Sims, S-I-M-S. The voting is split into multiple categories, reducing the number of competitors each time. Here's the timeline for voting for the Greatest Baker. Top 10 voting for each group is from October 27th to November 5th. Top 5 voting for each group is from November 5th through the 12th. Group winners voting is from November 12th through the 19th. Quarterfinals voting is from November 20th to the 26th. Semifinal voting is from November 27th through December 3rd. Finals voting is from December 4th through the 10th. Robert E. Lee Middle School is getting a new name. Tell San Angelo ISD your suggestions. By John Tufts, published October 27th. A San Angelo ISD middle school honoring the leader of the Confederate Army will be renamed before the end of the year, and district officials have invited San Angelo residents to make suggestions on a new name for the campus. Last week, school board members voted 6-1 to retire the name of Robert E. Lee Middle School, after months of seeking public input from San Angelo residents. On Friday, October 23rd, officials at the San Angelo Independent School District issued a news release announcing it was accepting proposals for what the new marquee on the building will read. Names that have already been proposed to district officials include Barack Obama Middle School, Tom Green Middle School, Mesquite Middle School, and Concho Valley Middle School, according to the results of a four-month survey held by San Angelo ISD. How to submit a new name for Robert E. Lee Middle School. Those who wish to propose a new name for Robert E. Lee Middle School, 2500 Sherwood Way, can do so by submitting their suggestions to the district in writing. Officials requested proposed names be submitted via email to communications@saisd.org before Monday, November 9th, when officials will have their next pre-agenda school board meeting. Tough enough. Cooper wins $20,000 in match roping at Cinch Roping Fiesta. By Charles Bryce. Published October 25th. Multi-time world champion Tough Cooper of Decatur earned a winner-take-all check of $20,000 in match roping at the 67th annual Cinch Roping Fiesta at the outdoor arena at the San Angelo Fairgrounds on Saturday. San Angelo calf roper Ty Harris received a check for $2,174.36 for finishing third in the second go-round with a time of 9.6 seconds. Cooper won a 12-head match against Haven McGed of Miles City, Montana. Caleb Smith of Belleville was originally scheduled to compete against McGed, but due to an injury, he was replaced by Cooper earlier in the week. McGed didn't go away empty-handed after receiving a payoff of $6,637.52 for winning the average in calf roping earlier in the day. Menards' Marcos Costa placed sixth in the first go-round of calf roping to earn a check of $572.20. His time was 10.2. Cesar Chavez honored in Washington, D.C., with help from two San Angelo musicians. By John Tufts. Published October 25th. Outside the President Woodrow Wilson House in Washington, D.C., the dancer twirled in time to the beat of mariachi music. Chilean-born Felipe Oarzun Molteado spun in the air and swayed his arms gently back and forth to the melody De Colores, a Spanish folk song popular with the United Farm Workers Movement in the 1950s and 60s. There to provide Molteado with music to move were two San Angelo musicians, Anthony Robles on trumpet and Rosando Ramos on vocals and guitar. De Colores is widely remembered as a song that a lot of farm workers would sing during that time period. It was part of their daily lives, said Ramos, who serves as mariachi music director for San Angelo's Lincoln Middle School and Lakeview High School. Both Ramos and Robles were invited to play in the nation's capital during Hispanic Heritage Month, where on October 17th, they participated in a music and dance video honoring the life of Latino American civil rights icon Cesar Chavez. Chavez, born in Yuma, Arizona in 1927, grew to become a labor leader and community organizer who exposed the hardships migrant Latino Americans faced working on American farms. In 1962, he helped found the United Farm Workers of America, according to ChavezFoundation.org. It felt really good to be part of this powerful event, Ramos said. We wanted to honor Chavez and express the struggles of Hispanic people when they didn't have a union and they were being mistreated in the workforce. The Smithsonian National Portrait Gallery provided images of Chavez for the music video. Selected audio portions of a speech given by Chavez can be heard while Molteado dances to De Colores. de colores, se visten los campos en la primavera. In colors, the fields are dressed in the spring. Ramos sang as 15-year-old Robles punctuated the melody with his trumpet. This song really meant a lot to me, Robles said. I come from a Hispanic family, and I had to work really hard to perfect my craft and to play alongside everyone else. In addition to musicianship, Robles is no stranger to working hard academically. Earlier this year, the Lakeview sophomore was accepted to attend St. Albans School in Washington, D.C., an elite all-boys boarding school nestled along the green grassy fields beside the Washington National Cathedral. While students of color constitute more than 40% of the academic body, and a significant number of them hail from other countries, officials at the school believe Robles is the first Texas Latino student to matriculate at St. Albans. It was great getting to perform the song, Robles said. It took about 3 months to get the music and dance locked down, but I'm very happy with the way the performance turned out. The music video was filmed and choreographed by Dana Tysoon Burgess, who operates an award-winning dance company in Washington, D.C. I'm a big believer that dance is one of our fundamental languages, as is music, Burgess says. It creates this bridge across different language barriers and between different socioeconomic barriers. I think that's one of the really beautiful and important things about the performing arts. Burgess has dedicated his artistic career into building such bridges. In 2016, Burgess was named the Smithsonian Museum's first choreographer in residence. He served as a cultural ambassador for the U.S. State Department for over 2 decades, an appointment he uses to promote international cultural dialogue through the global language of dance, according to his official website. Burgess hopes that people who watch the music video will be reminded of Chavez and remember that the struggle for civil rights hasn't ended. I think that within this time in America, we're fighting for the rights of all communities and all identities to be heard, to have equality, Burgess said. This video is one more way through the arts to carry that message forward. Burgess expressed gratitude to both the Woodrow Wilson House for its commitment in supporting social justice issues and to Mario Castillo, a Washington lobbyist and San Angelo native, who assisted in providing support for the project. Artists are finding ways to collaborate and work together, and I think that a collaboration between a dance company in our nation's capital and between artists in San Angelo, Texas, is a great way of showing how we can connect our communities and work together, especially within this difficult time, Burgess said. San Angelo crowd gathers for Trump train event by John Tufts, published October 24th. The vehicles, from loud lifted pickups to a small two-door smart car, were gathered early Saturday for the Trump train and rally in San Angelo. As participants met for the event in the parking lot outside Academy and Best Buy on Sherwood Way, the mood was energetic and cheerful. Participants spoke about how much they loved U.S. President Donald Trump's performance against former Vice President Joe Biden during the recent presidential debates. They also voiced support of the president's policies and the failings of liberal politicians. The recent decision by the San Angelo ISD to change the name of Robert E. Lee Middle School was also a topic of discussion, with at least one attendee stating the money could be spent better elsewhere. A local television journalist who arrived at the event said one attendee had called him the enemy of the people. That's a career first, the reporter said. About 10 a.m., the crowd departed the parking lot and roughly 50 vehicles began heading down Loop 306, honking their horns and flashing their lights in the chilly Saturday weather. Others joined the procession as it left the parking lot and made its way around the city. The Trump train cruise and rally was planned by the Republican National Hispanic Assembly and included opportunities to meet candidates, hear from guest speakers, and ask questions about the election. San Angelo Police investigating Saturday's shooting, Third Homicide This Week, by John Tufts, published October 24th. Officers with the San Angelo Police Department are investigating a fatal shooting that took place early Saturday, according to a news release. At around 5:30 a.m., Saturday, October 24th, police arrived in the 600 block of East 20th Street, where they found the body of a 29-year-old man who had been shot. Officials have ruled the death a homicide, according to a news release, making it San Angelo's third homicide in the span of a week. Justice of the Peace Susan Werner arrived and pronounced Juan V. Quintana of San Angelo deceased, according to the release. Officials said the investigation is active and had no other information to release as of noon Saturday. The San Angelo Police Department had sought the public's help in identifying three people of interest in the case. All three men were identified by officers by 4 p.m. Saturday. Anyone with information about the shooting or these men is asked to contact the San Angelo Police Department at 325-657-4315. People can also tip anonymously through the Crime Stoppers 24/7 tip hotline at 325-658-HELP-4357. Shannon Community Merger is Complete, Hospital Announces, by Jen Guadarrama, published October 23rd. San Angelo Medical Center on Friday announced the completion of its merger with Community Medical Center. "We have been working diligently to prepare for the first day of our shared operation, focusing on making it a seamless transition for the patients," said Shane Plimel, president and CEO at Shannon. "We look forward to welcoming and serving patients at the new Shannon South campus." Saturday, October 24th, marks the first day for the combined hospital systems, a news release issued Friday afternoon stated. All Community Medical Center and Community Medical Associates providers and staff will become part of Shannon effective Saturday. San Angelo Community Medical Center and Community Medical Associates will now become the new Shannon South Campus. They will now operate as Shannon South and Shannon Clinic South. The two hospitals have a combined staffing of just over 6,130, with Community having 1,236 employees and Shannon employing 4,896 people, according to information provided by the San Angelo Economic Development Team. What will patients see with the merger? Patient care will proceed as normal, and patients may still receive care from their current providers, the release stated. In addition, Shannon will be honoring all existing insurance plans that previously did not include Shannon as an in-network provider to expand access to care for more patients. Patients should not expect any interruption in coverage. City of San Angelo employees were among those who expressed concerns about the change, as their insurance was accepted through a deal with Community Medical Center. A city representative said in early October that once the merger was final, the city would change its coverage and that it would be accepted at Shannon. The city representative also said Shannon would honor the existing agreement it has with Community Medical Center. Community patients will have their records from both entities available Saturday when Shannon will introduce its Epic Medical Record System in the community offices. Previous patient records will still be available, and patients will also have access to the Shannon MyChart patient portal to view their health information. Shannon also intends to continue operating the Community Health Club, a hospital-based fitness center. More information about Shannon's vision for the integrated facilities and frequently asked questions regarding patient services are available at www.careforsanangelo.com. Patients may also call a dedicated Shannon Welcome Line with any questions regarding the transition. This service is available Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. by calling 325-481-2100. The history of the Shannon Community Merger. In early October, the Texas Health and Human Services Commission had given its blessing to the merger that has been in the works since April. Community Health Systems, based in Franklin, Tennessee, announced April 20th that the company had signed a definitive agreement to sell 171-bed San Angelo Community Medical Center and its associated assets to Shannon Health System. The company later announced the proposed merger of 231-bed Abilene Regional Medical Center and 188-bed Brownwood Regional Medical with Abilene-based Hendrick Health System. Along with the hospital's main campus, the deal also included Community Medical Center-associated assets. The sale of the hospital to Shannon was among a string of deals made by Community's parent company, which has been selling off assets since at least 2017, when it sold 30 hospitals across the country. In September, the Federal Trade Commission urged Texas regulators not to approve a merger between Shannon Medical Center and Community Hospital. The FTC's position, outlined in a 70-page document submitted to the Texas Health and Human Services Commission, is that the merger of San Angelo's hospitals would lead to a loss of competition, resulting in higher prices and harming consumers. The FTC made similar arguments for the proposed Hendricks acquisition of Abilene Regional. Changes to Texas state law in 2019 opened a pathway for the merger of the hospitals by trading federal oversight for state oversight, a move supported by the CEOs of Shannon and Hendrick during testimony they gave to the state's Public Health Committee on April 3, 2019. Police say San Angelo man arrested on kidnapping charge after being bit by dog after stolen car chase, by Rosanna Aguilera and Elena Edgen, published October 23rd. A San Angelo man was jailed on several charges Friday, including kidnapping. About noon Thursday, October 22nd, police vehicles could be seen at various locations around the Angelo Heights neighborhood in northwest San Angelo. Their focus seemed to hone in on two locations, one in the 2400 block of North Street and a second in the 2400 block of Forest Park Avenue. An ambulance was also seen, along with police vehicles, at the intersection of Lindell Street and Westland Avenue. Earlier in the day, officers had been investigating the kidnapping of a 30-year-old San Angelo woman, during which a man held her captive and physically and sexually assaulted her at a residence in the 600 block of East Harris Avenue, according to a news release issued Friday evening by San Angelo police. The man then stole her vehicle, which was located hours later in the 2400 block of Jamar Street in the Angelo Heights neighborhood. The suspect driver fled the officers, and a brief vehicle and foot pursuit ensued. At one point, a man entered a backyard, which had a dog. The dog bit him, according to the Post. During the subsequent investigation, detectives obtained a search warrant for the Harris Avenue residence and located a significant amount of evidence that corroborated the woman's statement, police said. Officers found him in the 2400 block of North Street and had him treated at a hospital before transporting him to Tom Green County Jail. Lionel Munoz, also known as Valley Boy and Gonzalez, 40, was arrested Thursday on suspicion of evading arrest with a vehicle and aggravated kidnapping, bodily injury, sexual abuse. He remained in Tom Green County Detention Center in lieu of a $157,500 bond as of 5:45 p.m. Friday, according to online jail records. Additional charges are forthcoming pending the outcome of this ongoing investigation, police said. Black cats, bats, and spiders get a bad rap on Halloween, by Selena McSherry, City of San Angelo, published October 13th. There are a lot of superstitions related to animals, especially on Halloween. Halloween stories and decorations depict the superstition that black cats, bats, and spiders are bad luck or evil. Like most celebrations, this holiday season has roots in ancient belief dating all the way back to the mid-1800s. So, how exactly were the superstitions concocted? Often used as symbols of bad luck, black cats' bad reputation dates back to the Dark Ages. Older, solitary women were commonly accused of witchcraft. many kept cats as their company. These cats were said to be their familiars, giving them a terrible reputation to this very day. In North America, there is a superstition that if a black cat crosses your path and you don't turn around and go back, it is a sign of bad luck following you. But let's be completely honest. Cats are jerks. All of them. Science says they have not evolved to become domesticated enough to obey human orders. Though they seem to hate their owners and the fact that they knock over items, creepily gaze at you, and don't respond when you call their name, many still absolutely love them. Medieval folklore also described bats as witches' familiars. Seeing a bat on Halloween was considered to be quite an ominous sign. It is said that if a bat were to fly into your house on Halloween night, then ghosts were present and had let the bats in. Though I can argue that bats are beneficial to our ecosystem because they eat ample amounts of insects and disperse the seeds of hundreds of species of plants, 2020 has only painted bats in a negative light. Scientists who have studied the coronavirus believe the virus evolved naturally and crossed into humans from an animal species, most likely a bat. Most of us hate spiders year-round, not just on Halloween. As a common source of fear, spiders join the ranks of bats and black cats in folklore as being companions for witches. One superstition states, if a spider falls into a candle-lit lamp and is consumed by the flame, a witch is nearby. However, one medieval superstition states that if you see a spider on Halloween, the spirit of a loved one is watching over you. So maybe arachnids aren't so bad after all. In fact, spiders play a huge part of our ecosystem. The creepy, crawly spiders we see actually eat the bugs that feast on crops. They also eat flies, moths, and mosquitoes. They don't mean to harm us. They do the world a service. Whether it be a black cat, bat, or spider, these superstitions take root and add to the spooky and often silly nature of the holiday. Selena McSherry is the Nature Center Coordinator for the City of San Angelo. Contact her at 325-942-0121 or Selena, S-E-L-I-N-A, dot McSherry, M-C-S-H-E-R-R-Y, at COSATX.US. And now, here's the weekly horticulture column by Allison Watkins. Some plants prefer cold weather, while others need help to survive. Published October 29th. Having an early first freeze can be frustrating for a gardener. Many homeowners tried saving warm season flowers, vegetables, and herbs by covering to protect from the recent cold spell. The most success in covering plants will come when a protective covering is floated over the plant, covering as much of the ground as possible all the way to the ground. This helps trap heat that rises up from the ground at night and can possibly keep the plants a few degrees warmer. The covering should not be wrapped around stems and trunks, as it will not provide as much protection. Potted plants should be brought inside or moved up on the porch against the wall. The home may radiate just enough warmth to keep the plants a few degrees warmer. When cold weather returns and it stays well below freezing for long periods, it will be time to let go of warm season annuals and replace with winter hardy plants. Cool season flowers, vegetables, and herbs can be planted right now to keep the curb appeal up and to provide a tasty harvest for the dinner table throughout the winter. Cool season herbs like cilantro and parsley are happiest when planted in the fall and grown through the cooler winter months. Many people try to grow them in the spring and are disappointed when they fade and dwindle in the summer heat. Evergreen herbs like rosemary, sage, thyme, and oregano keep going strong all year long, and winter doesn't slow them down. Some herbs such as mint, lavender, and chives are only somewhat evergreen and will keep going unless there's a really hard freeze. Many of the popular, commonly used herbs are easy to grow and well adapted to the local climate. Most of them do best in full sun and need well-drained soil, but mint is an exception and can take some shade in soggy soil. If soil is heavy and compacted, most herbs will perform better if the soil is loosened up and amended with compost to improve the drainage. Many herbs also do well in containers and can even be grown inside during the winter. Basil is an indispensable culinary herb for many, but cannot live through the winter outside. To grow it inside, find a spot with the brightest light, about 6 hours of sun per day, and plant in a container with a tray to catch excess water. But don't keep it on a windowsill when it's cold outside. It needs temperatures in the 70s, and the air next to windows gets colder than the rest of the room. Allison Watkins is the Texas A&M AgriLife Extension Agent for Horticulture in Tom Green County. Contact her at aewatkins@ag.tamu.edu.
Thank you for joining us for this reading of the San Angelo Standard Times. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.